Welcome to SelfDiscoveryWisdom.com, formerly known as Self Discovery Media. On these podcasts, you're going to hear people who speak from the heart. They've taken the journey in life. Many things have happened to them, but they've changed it to happening for them. And in their strength, their courage, they've discovered their abilities and their wisdom, and they are now sharing it here with you. Do enjoy each show. We bring it to you with love and knowing that it's going to help you on your journey of life. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Ignite Your Heart and Soul right here on selfdiscoverywisdom.com. I'm your host, and my wonderful guest today is Dr. Judith Olaf, transformative power of the genius of empathy. The genius of empathy. Wonderful. Why are we talking about that? Because Christ's sake, we need a lot more empathy in the world at the present moment. So how do we tap into that? She said these are practical skills to heal your sensitive self and the relationship and the world. Very, very apropos to where we are at in the state of being right now, and a hell of a lot more empathy needs to come into it. But a lot of people just don't know how to step into empathy. And you point out very poignantly that it's about self-healing, the healing of relationships, which equals the healing of the world. And she says, in a stressful world, you may feel overwhelmed and exhausted, but now more than ever, the transformative practices of empathy offers a healing balm. Empathy is a form of emotional intelligence that enables us to offer care and compassion with intention. And her new book, Genius of Empathy, Practical Skills to Heal Your Sensitive Self, Your Relationships, and the World, which comes out this month, the best-selling author also shares the magic of empathy to find a greater self-love and to embody your most compassionate selves in the relationship with others and in our world. Drawing from insights from neuroscience, psychology, energy medicine, Dr. Olaf introduces empathy as a daily healing practice. Readers will learn how to access their sensitivities, smooth their nervous system, stop absorbing the emotions of others, a skill that we will make negatively the world feels navigatingly world safer. Each chapter contains real life stories and offers actionable exercises to practicing and expressing empathy, especially with relationships that are difficult or draining. In these workplace settings, it provides a roadmap of how to use empathy to improve communication with co-workers who may be hard to get along with, and a model grounded ways to support kindness and innovation among teams. This is something that I think we need in absolutely everyday life. One of the things that we cannot show empathy to others until we show empathy to ourselves, because love comes from us, but we need to be the love that comes from that it comes from. So empathy, people think it's just like, I'm sorry that happened to you. That is a form of empathy, but it's really, truly trying to understand what the other person is going through and how we can step up in a form of caring and compassion. Welcome to the show, hon.
Thank you. It's great to be on your show to talk about empathy, such an important topic.
Yeah, I feel that, you know, I just put out a book a couple of months ago, which is an anthology collective coming from podcasts and for the years of doing shows on children and how we're leaving them behind. They've become forgotten. We're not teaching them things like compassion and empathy. And a little plug, because it is a fundraiser book to Our Forgotten Children, it addresses in each chapter what the problem is and what we need to do and how we need to be aware to care. And I feel, you know, my chapter was about when children gather together on social media and then go around stabbing people just to feel something, we've let our children down. We haven't taught them compassion or empathy or connection or purpose. And it's like, where did we go wrong? Did it start with the lack of empathy?
It started with the lack of education about empathy. That's why I wrote The Genius of Empathy, is to begin to educate adults and young adults, and parents can educate children about how to be human again. We've forgotten, we've lost track about how to be human.
Yes.
The beauty of being human. And empathy is that key element that if you reclaim it, you're back on the path of being the very best human you can be. and protecting yourself from getting overwhelmed from compassion overload and empathy overload. You don't just have empathy 24 hours a day for everyone. That's not healthy empathy. No. In the book, I talk about how to set boundaries, how to say no to people in a loving way, how to know when you're not available at that particular time because you're so tired, you need to rest yourself. So part of the genius of empathy is learning how to take care of yourself in addition to how to give with people to people in the proper, healthy way.
It's funny because I always believe that when you just open a book, it's what you need to see. And right here, if you're just talking about it, make sleep and downtime a priority, right? Yeah. And you can't have, if you want to have empathy for other people, it needs to come from a healthy place. It needs to come from a fortified place. If you're depleted and you're giving empathy, it's draining. You kind of step in more into despair, don't you?
Oh, yes, definitely. And I also write about empaths in the book, and empaths are highly sensitive people who care so much and want to, that they absorb the anxiety and stress of the world. And so I want to teach people in the book how not to do that, how to be an empowered empath or somebody who has empathy and really have strength inside to be the peaceful warrior so that you don't absorb everybody else's stress. And the world is full of stress now.
Oh, God, yes.
Learning how to deal with it so that you don't absorb it, but you're also empathic.
Yeah. I am one of those. And I have to admit, there are times where I just feel a weight on me, like I'm feeling the depression of the world. And it's like, I cannot be of any use to you when I'm in that state. That's so, then I kind of have to shut down and do my own healing to get back to a place where I can empathize, but in a solutional way, where I feel empowered to help, rather than feeling an overwhelming of despair, I'm feeling powerless.
Yes, yes. At those moments when you feel powerless, it's time to come back and replenish your own system so that you could be in a good state to feel empathy again. Because if you're hungry or if you're lonely or if you're tired, it's very hard to have empathy for others. Mm-hmm. And so you need to just take a step back, practice self-care, get some good sleep. Sleep is essential to well-being. And when you feel good and you wake up with a good night's sleep, it's easier to have empathy for the people around you. And that doesn't mean being a doormat.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything like that. It means being in the decider about how you respond to people and that you're the empathic person and you can be proud of that. At the same time, you're not going to let somebody walk all over you. And we could talk about how not to do that and how to be aware of that.
I think being aware of the pain, which we see, I mean, a lot of people, I won't watch the news, it's just full of pain, I can't take it. And I think it's being aware what's going on. And if we're powerless to physically do anything, what we can do is vibrationally send out love and care and compassion, because that is boundless, right? It really, especially the more we do it, the power of either prayer or just positive energy really does help, even though people don't see it. It just becomes something that is a solution. But if we get stuck in the powerless of it and we feel, oh, I can't do anything, and then it's la, 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 We don't want you to ignore what's going on, but what we don't want you to do is have what's going on cripple you. Because if you feel crippled and you feel, I can't do anything, and, I know somebody who says it, but I don't know what to do. I just can't do it. I don't know where to start. And I will say, pick something. Pick something you feel empowered over, that you feel you can contribute, that you can be a part of in a positive way. Don't try and take on everything of the world, because that's when it just pulls you down, isn't it? And then it's hard to have empathy when you're feeling drained and empty.
It's very hard to have empathy. And at those times, you want to take care of yourself. But you do want to have empathy when you can give it. And there's a chapter on the sacred art of empathic listening. Of how do you listen to someone without getting drained?
Yes.
A few tips. Set a limited time for listening to them. Don't have open-ended time because it can go forever and wear you out. Stick to one subject. As if you stick to one subject that you're sharing about, rather, if you have a conflict with your mate, you don't want to have this empathy session without sticking to one subject. Because if you go on to 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 and bring up the kitchen sink, you're going to lose them.
Yeah.
And it's not the way to communicate. Just a tip for empathic communication is one subject at a time.
I like that. Another chapter I've turned to here, which I think is really important. I want you to talk about the 4 styles of empathy.
Yes, yes. There are different styles of empathy. There's cognitive empathy, which is more intellectual empathy. They feel it with their minds. Mm-hmm. Emotional empathy, where your heart goes out to someone mm-hmm. and you attune to them, but you might take on mm-hmm. what they're feeling. Mm-hmm. Intuitive empathy is where you intuitively respond to the person. You get intuitive flashes about them. Your energy is very sensitive. It goes up or it goes down. And you get these knowings about
yes.
people.
Yes.
And then there's spiritual empathy, where you see people from the most positive point of view and how they could be their best selves. And oftentimes spiritual empathy, people who have that, they don't see the real person or the full person. They need to see what's incredible about them
yeah.
and balance it with their struggles and, you know, perhaps what's not so good about them.
Mm. Kind of seeing them from the inside out.
Yeah, the whole person. Mm-hmm. You don't see a part of a person.
Yeah.
The thing with empathy, you have to realize that people have good and they have bad.
Yeah.
And they have struggles and they have, you know, glorious moments. So human beings are multifaceted. And the empathy isn't just for when you like someone.
Yeah.
Well, this book is about how to find practical tools mm-hmm. to develop empathy, even when
yes.
you don't like someone or you don't
yeah.
agree with their values. I mean, that's, and why would you want to do that? Because we're going on a cycle in this world where obviously what we're doing isn't mm-hmm. work.
You know, 100%.
We have to develop something new.
Mm-hmm.
And now's the time, and empathy lets you at least feel for a person's suffering or shortcomings. And what that does is that it creates a different energy around mm. the interaction. And if more people did that, you would change the pattern.
Yes.
Or like polarization and not understanding the opponent, you know, and the opponent, you know, in the Art of War, I quote the Art of War, which is written by Sun Tzu, who's an age-old warrior. Mm-hmm. And he's, when we go to war and we don't have empathy, that's a failure that mm-hmm. we need to be miserable about. We need to be unhappy about that. Never feel like that's a triumph. We have exhausted every other means mm-hmm. and other means include empathy. If you have any chance of getting through to someone, whether it's your boss or a coworker or on a larger scale, empathy will give you that in to at least have a chance to turn that interaction around, because people want to be seen, they want to be heard, they want to be appreciated, even your opponents. And when they feel that way, even the horrible tough ones mm-hmm. might soften a little bit, and then you have a crack to talk about it. So
yeah, you know, like it used to be when you had these beauty pageants, you know, what do you want? I want peace for the world. You know, for me, it's like, I would like everyone to have a loving conscience, because from that loving consciousness, you can't inflict harm on anyone else. To do so, you know, is harming yourself, right? So for right. people that you feel don't have a consciousness, you know, I wish them to feel a loving consciousness, because that's only then when they realize what they're doing is harmful. But if they don't have that consciousness, they never acknowledge the harm.
That's very true. But I want to inject an element of reality here, too, in terms of there's a chapter in the book on narcissist sociopaths. And people, it's important to realize that
yes.
they have empathy deficient disorder. They don't
yes.
have empathy. They're not neurologically
yeah.
wired to have empathy.
Yeah.
So those people don't have a loving conscience.
No, no.
And they don't
It doesn't
care.
matter how much you wish it on them, right?
Right. So you need to be aware of these people in your life. And if you can, not get involved with them.
Yes.
But if you do get involved with them, to lower your expectations, these are not your soulmates. These are not your friends or your best friends. These are people you're going to have to manage with very savvy communication skills. So you could get what you want, let's say at work, if you have a narcissistic boss, you always have to frame things in terms of how it will serve them.
Yes.
Not you. Otherwise,
yes.
You'll never get it. So it's important for those who are developing empathy to know very clearly who the narcissist, sociopaths and psychopaths are. And in the book, I go through points. This is how you identify them. They do love bombing. They are self-absorbed. They get angry when you don't do things their way. They use gaslighting to make it, you're crazy. They all do the same thing.
Yes.
So you want to pick that out, and you want to know that they lead with incredible seductive energy.
Yeah.
It's very hard to resist. It's some kind of skill they have.
Oh, I know. And they're very charismatic, right?
Very charismatic.
Yes, yes.
You must, you know, if you're developing empathy, you've got to be really aware if you're around such charisma. I mean, it might be with a nice person, but it very well could be with a narcissist. So
exactly. Been there, done that. Yes. And you know, when we look at some of our leaders in the world, they are that. And, you know, how does a nation step up to that? And I think if a nation came together, I think with the love and empathy, you know, what it is manipulating them to feel that if they change their ways, they would be more powerful. You're not going to, you know, appeal to them. But if you seed in them that this is their idea, this is better for them, then maybe they'll swim down that stream. But most of the time, when they're at that level, there is absolutely zero consciousness. It's about their power. I call it the little boy syndrome, where,
right,
you know, somewhere along the line, they have not learned love and compassion. They have not learned that consciousness. It's all about their survival at any cost. And it doesn't matter who pays the price. It's about that egomaniac power, that need to be in charge. And that is, you know, as you said, it's a neuron kind of missing somewhere. We're not going to change them. How do we stand up against them, though, in order to change the tide when they're in leadership? And that really then comes to a nation coming together collectively, isn't it, to stand up against them?
Well, that would be ideal. But in the book, I also, you know, really emphasize the power of the individual. You are not powerless. The individual, you do it. You know, you have, you know, if you're with a narcissist, you know, I would suggest, you know, saying something like, I hear you. I will take what you say under consideration and thank you for sharing it. That's not agreeing with them. That's not disagreeing with them. What you're doing is you're giving them a gift where you're saying, I hear you. And don't underestimate the power of that, because they don't feel heard or seen. I mean, this is, so if you give them that and then you wait to see what the next move is, it's often very interesting. You might say something like, you want to catch lunch? You know, or something.
Yes. Yeah.
Going, okay. You know, and then see what happens. And, you know, you're speaking to their wounded inner child who is just, you know, wants to be seen, wants to be heard, but wants power. They want power.
Control.
You can't.
Because of the lack of control inside of them, right?
Exactly. But as you said, we can't expect them to change. That's not really possible. But we can use this technique I'm talking about to somehow get around them and use the Zen approach rather than, I don't agree with them, I don't want them in my life. I mean, you might feel that way, but it's interesting to try this empathy approach that I'm talking about. And you can be very, very surprised with the reactions that they have.
Yeah, I mean, I was married to a narcissist, and there, you know, there are different levels. I've done a few shows on narcissism, and it's not everybody's a psychopathic narcissist. There are different levels of it, and it came from, you know, kind of his own neglect in his family, you know, that always wanting to stand out, always wanting to, you know, to be in control, where he, because he felt out of control. And the only way I could leave that relationship peacefully was to cede that it was his idea, to see that this is what he wanted, to see that he would be better off without me. So when it did come to the time, I think it's time, he agreed, right? So, and you have to be patient. If you're wanting a peaceful out, you've got to be patient and kind of need those seeds in there so they feel that it's their empowerment. Don't try and take control away from them. But, you know, give them control in a seeding format where they think it's they've grown it.
Yeah. And it's hard to get out. I admire you for getting out. You're very clever and you're very aware. But most people aren't. You know, most
it took
people...
a long time. It took a long time. I had to recover from kind of the suppression and kind of come out, you know, of that darkness, you know, into the light. And the more I stepped into my own empowerment, my own light, the more it diminished his power on me. So, but it was a journey, and it was, you know, having to have that empathy for myself, which I had lost completely. It was a rediscovery.
That's exactly right. And there's a chapter on self-empathy, which is the place to start to develop empathy. It's to have empathy for what you've been through.
Yes.
And how hard you've tried, and how some things succeeded, other things didn't. Mm-hmm. You know, just you've done a good job, you know, talk to yourself with that inner dialogue.
Yes.
Start with yourself, and then you bring that to your interactions with other people. As you don't want to polarize, you don't want to judge them, you don't want to shame them. And with some people, like at work with coworkers, you may not even want to change. You can't change certain people, but you can respond to them in a way that brings different behavior.
Yeah.
In that.
Yeah.
And empathy is the key. They're not expecting empathy. Mm-hmm. They're expecting a fight.
Yes.
Most narcissists or people in the power are expecting some kind of huge battle. And if you don't give that to them and you maneuver and say, I heard you, thank you for sharing, I'll give it some thought. Thank you. You know, they don't know what to do with that. They're like,
I have to admit, I did do something different, you know, at the point of every time an argument tried to come up, I say, please take it up with your mirror. That's the only one that's interested.
Oh, that's very confrontive, though.
But it just meant that I'm not interested. Whereas before, he would have pulled me in defense, and you know, me trying to, you know, literally going from room and room to room, because he was never physical. It was, you know, they're browbeaters, they're piranhas, right? They suck the energy out of you. But it was just me letting him know, no, you don't have that control anymore. I'm not going to be engaged with that kind of behavior. And that, and look, 23 years later, he apologized. It took 23 years, but I got an apology, which is amazing.
Well, you're describing a story that is so typical of narcissists and the number of years you will put into that relationship. Mm-hmm. So I tell my patients and my workshop participants, do not get involved with them, even if you feel that rush of love. And
Yes.
It's too long of a process to get out.
Oh, God, is it? Yes. Please see the warning signs beforehand. You know, buyer beware.
I hope people listening can really get that, because a lot of empaths, you know, who are my patients, they're like, no, I could heal them. They're just not loved enough. If I give them.
Yes.
And I wish that was true. And people get mad at me for saying it's not true. But it's not true. You know, with a full-blown malignant narcissist who doesn't have empathy, you're not going to get very far with them, because they're not wired in the same way. And I can't stop you from getting involved, but I could write this book. I can have conversations like we're having. And, you know, I hope you at least have a crack open for those of you who suddenly met the love of your life, who's so charismatic. But what I suggest, let's say you have, don't do something according to their plan. Just do one little thing to create a conflict. and see how they respond.
Yeah.
As they don't usually respond very well. They'll say, you want to be with your friends? You don't want to be with me? You don't value the relationship? What's that? You know, and then they start.
Yeah.
And by then you're so discombobulated by, oh, no, I'll go with you.
Exactly. I mean, like, you know, 42 years ago, there wasn't even a conversation over narcissism. And, you know, due to being able to put these books out, do in podcasts where we can talk about it, you know, the awareness is there now. And really, it is anytime you're going into a relationship, I always say this, that journey to your own empathy, self-empathy and love, self-love, it will bring you the right partner or bring you somebody that sees you in the love that you are, right? And be respectful and loving because they're on the same frequency. But you don't want it to be he completes me, she completes me. You want to complement each other. Each one of you are strong in your own individualism, but when you come together as a collective, as an us, you complement each other in a way that strengthens your own identity, but it isn't completing you. We are constantly searching for love outside, and we're not finding that empathetic love and compassionate love for ourselves. And so what we do is if we go from one relationship to the other thinking it's totally different, only to find out it's the same pattern underlining, the same type of person that you're going for because you haven't healed yourself and you haven't given that empathy and love to yourself. And if we really want to, in work, in love, in any form of anything in life, we really need to do the work on ourselves, don't we, in order to have that compassion and empathy, but also to be strong enough to stand in our own love and our own ground.
That's right. That's absolutely well said. And everyone who's listening, the way to start today, there's an empathy and action section at the end of each chapter. Begin by saying something nice to you about yourself, you, rather than beating yourself up. Because I know as a psychiatrist and an empath that we beat.
Oh, do we?
And don't, it's no reason to feel ashamed.
No.
It's no reason to come down on yourself. But we have to do it less and less, you know. And just for today, you could begin to practice self-empathy and say something beautiful and empathic to yourself, such as you've been through so much. You know, I really appreciate that. You've done a great job. As opposed to, you're not enough. You're stupid. Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? Can you feel the difference in tone?
Yes.
And I want to say that there's a distinction between the mind and the heart when it comes to empathy. The mind will come up with all kinds of good reasons why not to have empathy with someone. So the heart, you want to drop to your heart, focus on something loving or something that makes you happy, and begin to see the situation from your heart and how you can have empathy for yourself in it. Start with empathy for yourself so you can see clearly and know what to do. And that's a good starting place.
I call it the knowingness, and it's feel your knowledge, don't think your knowledge. Because I feel, you know, like when we open up to whatever source, energy, God, universe, spirit, doesn't matter. When we open that up, it becomes our compass, which will guide us. It will ignite our heart into truth and passion. It will lead into our spirited action for our mind to know what it needs to know when it needs to know it. And I feel when we feel that and allow that wisdom to guide which knowledge is relevant at that moment, we're not running around on a treadmill. Yes, but what if, because this is all the data we have. And a lot of that data is past experience that's still contaminating any kind of current or future experience. So when we feel it, we kind of have more clarity. Ah, yes, I can do that. I can be that. And it just gives us so much more power to take the right action rather than getting caught up in our perpetual what if mind.
That's right. And it's, you know, what it gives you, why you want to have empathy is that it helps you detach from all the relationships who have hurt you or just taking up too much space in your mind by showing empathy, even for the crippled heart of a narcissist, not the horrible things they did to you. You don't have empathy for that.
Yep.
You don't have empathy for betrayals or emotional punishment or abuse. Yep. That's not what you have empathy for, but you have empathy for just their poor crippled heart and they couldn't do any better.
Yeah.
And it's so sad. But what that gives you is that suddenly you're not so attached to the narcissist anymore. You're not thinking about them. It's not going around in your head. It's not back there. It drifts off somewhere. So it allows you to let go of your obsession with whatever your relationship was, so you can clear the way and move on to a beautiful future, as you're describing, with empathic people.
Yeah, exactly. I want to discuss what you got to hear in the book, the neuroscience of empathy, because, you know, a lot of people think empathy is just spiritual and kind of woo-woo, you know, touchy-feely, you're too sensitive. But there is the science behind empathy, of what empathy is and how, you know, how it is a channel of attunement. So can you talk about that, please?
Yes, it's so fascinating. Is there something called the Mother Teresa effect, where if you are in your life and you witness an act of empathy out in the world, you know, maybe somebody did something nice for somebody. I recently saw, you know, in the gym, you know, the beautiful wife is carrying the husband who can't walk onto the machine so that he can work out his arms. But the loving bliss that she did that with just made me. But the Mother Teresa effect is when you see something like that. If I were to draw your blood at that moment, that your immunity would go up, your blood indices would get stronger, your cortisol and stress hormones would go down, your parasympathetic nervous system would get activated, and you activating the vagus nerve, and that would calm you down. So just by that one act of witnessing empathy, look at what it does for you.
Yes. And, you know, I think that we've become so very, very jaded in the world. And, you know, it's a form of protection. I can't take any more. I can't take any more wars. I can't take any more hate. I can't take any more disconnect. You know, just that vibration is too much. And it's like, I'm just going to put a wall around myself. You're right, and protect myself. Well, that doesn't really protect us, does it? What it does, it detaches us. And then we're really not doing what we're here to do, which is love and be a community. And we're too scared to go look for that community because we're just too scared of being hurt again, or just, oh, it's too late, the world has gone to hell in a handbasket. And it's like, no, we created the problem, but we are also the solution. It's what we feed, it's what we seed, what grows. And if we have that empathetic love and that compassion, we can change this tide, but we can't just do it, we have to be it.
Yes, it's again, it starts with the individual. And I want to say, I understand if that's how you feel, that you want to just withdraw from the world and not have anything to do with it, and maybe just be with your animals, you know, it feels much safer and you just give up. I understand that feeling. And if that's what you want to do, God bless you, go do it. But there is another way too, where you can make yourself stronger to deal with the world and to begin to create a shift in yourself so you're more empowered rather than simply retreating.
Yes.
So I do have empathy for those who want to retreat. Yeah. I've felt it many times.
Yes, oh gosh, yes, yes.
But I also feel a dedication to doing my part to change this predicament that the human race has gotten itself into, you know, this no-win predicament. And it's people like you and I, regular people who have empathy, who have some skills about how to teach it. You know, this is something I want to do. And this I know has power, because this is the power of goodness.
It
and
is.
Ever in doubt, you travel down the path of empathy. If you're having a bad day, the best thing to do is try and help somebody else at that moment, even if you don't feel like it, as that will change your neurochemicals and you will be more positive then. You'll feel a rush of rejuvenation.
It's sometimes the simple thing of a smile, right? You know, you're going to buy that coffee and the poor barista is just kind of inundated with the next latte, batte, watte, with everything else. And you just say, how are you doing today? You know, and giving them a smile. I see you. I see you, all right? I hope your day gets better. And that person, instead of just feeling next, nobody sees them, you're just making the coffee, you could be a robot, suddenly you're a human. Suddenly somebody's seeing you, and it changes the way you feel about how you interact with the next person.
That's true. And an exercise I suggest in the book is go into a grocery store that has a long line and let the mother with all the children screaming go in front of you.
Yes, yes, yes.
And it's like you're giving them a gift. They look at you like, oh my God, thank you. Like you're giving them $1 million. But we don't really do that for each other. So if occasionally you could let somebody go ahead of you, it will create, pay it forward. It will create, they'll think about it the next time, because I'm sure they've never thought about letting someone
exactly.
go in front of them.
Yeah, that good deeds beget good deeds.
Yeah, it's true. And it also makes you feel better. But you have to experience it, because the mind feels like, I'm just so tired. I don't even have the energy to do that. Yeah. I just have to get out of here. I can't let that mother go ahead of me. I mean, that's, but I just want to prepare you. That's what the mind will say.
Yeah.
But if you actually do it, and the heart will say,
yes,
this feels good.
Yes.
This feels rejuvenating. I'm so glad I did it. But you must do it sometimes at a time when your mind is saying, oh, no, I don't want to do it.
That's when you go, switch off. I'm listening with the heart.
Yes, you make a choice. That's an empowered choice.
Mm-hmm.
You make a choice of what to listen to. And the whole message of the book is one of hope and shift into your heart whenever you can to see the situation rather than just doing the same old, same old. You know what it feels like to be beaten up with your mind.
Exactly. Exactly. You get nowhere. It's a perpetual hamster wheel. And it doesn't matter how much you run, you're going nowhere, right? So this is why I feel you have to feel it from the heart in order to see it differently and be able to take different action. So now there's something else you've got here, preparing for empathetic listening. So describe this. This is a space you need to put yourself in order to listen.
Yes, yes. You can't be looking at your cell phone.
Right.
You can't be thinking about what's going on next or the fight you had with your spouse or what's happening with your children. When you're listening, you set aside all your personal problems and you're 100% present for somebody for a certain delineated amount of time. You know, again, I don't suggest open-ended listening where somebody could go on for hours and you're just sitting there not knowing how to interrupt.
Right. And then you become a dumping ground.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. You have an agreed upon time. Let's say you're going to listen for 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So for that 10 minutes, you're there for the person and you're sitting in a very neutral or heart-centered place. Your eyes are loving. You don't say much. You don't add a lot of verbiage. This is their time to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Yours, it's not your time to identify with, oh, I went through that too and it was so terrible.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get into that when you're listening. You high quality listening is hard to find.
Mm-hmm.
And it means no interruptions. It means you might say, wow, yeah, or something like that. But you want to give the person time to express themselves. And then you can choose how you want to dialogue about it. Maybe that's the end, just they wanted to be heard. But you want to choose another time to talk about it if you're willing, if you feel like you want to. And you need to talk about it in a solution-oriented way.
Yes, yes.
And so those are just some tips on how to begin.
You know, and sometimes all that person needs after they have downloaded is, I see you, I hear you, and give them a hug.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes.
Right? You know, sometimes maybe that's just that next step. You know, before you come back with the solutions, because they've just emptied themselves and they're feeling kind of vulnerable, but also they've emptied and they don't realize they have spent that emotion. Because I always say, you need to spend the emotions, not hold on to them, right? You know, release them, don't hold on to them. And sometimes just somebody saying, I see you, I hear you, and giving them a hug. And when you're ready to talk about it further, I'm here.
Yeah, right. Or you can plan a time to talk about further, you know, a time and a time limit. And also I want to point out, some people don't enjoy hugs.
Mm-hmm.
I strongly suggest that you ask, you know, would you like a hug?
Yes.
And just get some requests about the hug, because otherwise, you know, people will just be coming around hugging all the time. And I don't personally want that, you know, at a particular time, but I don't, hugs, you need to tune in or ask a person, is this like a hug?
Yeah.
And if they say no, you go, great.
Right. Right. Now you've got to make comfortable eye contact. Now, explain that because there are some people, and also there are certain cultures that if you're staring at them, it's offensive, right? So, where is the eye contact? I see you, I'm looking, I'm always, you make eye contact and you smile, but you don't want people to feel that you're staring them down.
Right, exactly. And you don't want to look too probingly into their eyes where it's intrusive. Good to keep a little step backward, loving detachment. You just send a nice, have you ever, with your dog, the way your dog looks at you, with all with that loving, that's how you want to look at other people. It's just, you just love them unconditionally and you're not asking for anything. You're not probing. You're being there and giving off positive energy while they're being vulnerable.
You're
And
smizing, as one of the famous models used to say. You're smiling with your eyes.
you don't want to be too eager to fix them.
Yes.
Your role is not to sit there and fix them. Your role is to listen and to learn how to be a high quality listener, which isn't really valued in our society
No.
because they go so fast and the cell phones and the this and I that appointment that if people don't have time just to be with each other. And I'm not suggesting a lot of time. You could do this for 5 minutes or 3 minutes, anything, sometimes 1 minute. A person just has to say, I need to just tell you something, and it's a 1 minute kind of share. And so that's it. But you don't have to be there for all this time. And I think that's why some people are afraid of empathy because of the time commitment or it's too much work. And you set your own parameters. You don't go on forever. You have to learn how to set boundaries and reel this in. And if somebody wants to keep going, you have to say, this is what I have to give at this point. And we could talk about talking again or not. But for now, this is it. And to, but most people don't know how to learn to set the healthy boundaries like that with a loving space to be able to reel it in. Because people like to tell their life stories, I warn you.
I know.
And that won't be that helpful in this particular situation that I'm talking about. You want to limit it to one thing, not a life story.
Well, you answered that, follow the no fix rule. So the one I'm going to jump into, healthy giving.
A healthy giving is when you give to somebody, but you don't try and fix them. And you give people the dignity of their own path in terms of working certain things out for themselves. And you don't want to take that away. If somebody's struggling, you could be there for somebody, but and you could offer all kinds of suggestions, which I don't recommend because it's, they need to, you hold energy for them. And you wish them well. And if they ask you advice, perhaps you want to give it. But what you don't want to do is offer unsolicited advice. It's not appreciated. It's not, and
They
you
might not
take.
be in the right space and time to receive it.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And so, healthy giving is not giving 100% of the time. It's giving when you have the energy to give or if you're in a caregiving situation where you might not have the energy to give as much as the situation is asking of you need to take periodic breaks and meditate, eat a good meal, walk in the forest, get outside, just practice some kind of self-care if you're in that sacred caretaking situation with a loved one where it really is quite demanding and it asks for more than you have to give oftentimes. But aside from that situation, you want to practice self-care. You want to not feel that you're not being compassionate if you decide not to help.
You sometimes just haven't got something to give at that time. Right, you just don't, and it's not that you're being uncaring. It's just like, I hear you, but I just can't deal with it at this moment. We'll revisit it later. So you're not brushing them off, but you're just letting them know it's just not the right time. But here's another one that is really, really important: cultivating tolerance and patience.
Oh, yes, tolerance and patience rather than instant judgment and polarization. Now, what if somebody, is talking about some value that they have or their support of somebody that you don't respect at all, that you don't want to you don't, it just insults your view of the world. However, there they are. So yeah. What do? Do you show your judgment and your disdain and feel it? No. You feel it, but you don't, really express, you don't want to get into it with
yes.
them.
Right? Yes.
You don't want, but you do want to show them that you heard them.
Yeah.
Why would you take that extra step with them? Because it shifts the energy of this horrible pattern that we're in. And if more of us do that, it will create a global ripple effect. That's why you want to do it.
And, you know, and that patience is that somebody's going through something. Right. And you're okay. You see the solution. I mean, you know, if somebody's in depression, please don't tell them to snap out of it. They would if they could. Right. Yes. They're going through something. They need to navigate. Maybe you just need to hold space for them. Right. And it's a process. And anything that somebody's going through is a process, and have patience with them. They may revisit it, you know, a few times before they can get to a point where they can let it go. But it's, you know, having patience with people at the level that they're at, not just where you're at.
Right, exactly. And patience is hard. Patience is a kind of a spiritual act. You know, take a breath, give them a lot of space, a lot of time. You don't want to give indefinite time, especially if they're hurting themselves.
Yes.
You have to use your judgment in each situation, how much patience you're going to have. If you have a drug addict relative who wants to live in your house and take your money, you don't want to support that. You don't want to have patience for that. But if someone is, let's say, going through a physical challenge and is really rough and they're depressed for longer than you would think they would be, you want to give them that. You want to let them process it as they can with as much positive help as possible. So each person, you have to intuitively gauge, how patient do I want to be with them? How tolerant? No, I don't want to talk to this person who's going to be spewing hateful rhetoric.
Right.
I don't want to talk to them for any length of time. But in my one interaction with them, I want it to go this way. And I want, you know, in terms of empathy, and I don't want to dwell there. Right. And I don't want to have any lengthy conversations unless they're willing to talk about it in a different way. But you don't want to tell them that. You just want to behave differently, shift the energy, see what happens.
Yeah. You don't engage when they go down that hate rhetoric. No. Redirect the conversation to something else.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone has tried that.
Oh, yeah. Now, this is a very big one too. Know the difference between worry and concern.
Hey, worry is natural. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody worries. However, it doesn't do any good. You know, it really doesn't. It's maybe a sign of your caring. But worry, you could worry about everything and it becomes obsessive and it eats away at your life.
Yes.
Worry is an obsessive pattern. And I understand worry, you know, I experience worry, of course, but I try and minimize it and shift it over to concern, which is more concerned about this person, but I'm not kind of destroying myself with worry in the meantime. And so worry is something to reconsider. You know, I was raised in a Jewish household and my mother was a professional worrier.
My mom was a worrier too. Dramatic worrier.
Yeah. Oh my God, she worried. Oh, what if this? Or what if that?
Yes.
You know, what happened? You know, what's wrong now? And I've had to learn to recondition myself with empathy. So I don't do that with my partner. I don't do that with my friends. It's not a good thing to over worry like that.
Yeah. You know, and it's so unproductive. Because when you're in a state of worry, you cannot see the solutions. When you're in a state of concern, you're now open to what can be done about it. So I think it's a different, you know, kind of a different energy source altogether. Worry, you tighten up, everything about you goes like this. No clarity is going to come in that state of being. No clarity at all. But when you step it to concern, okay, yes, this is an issue. We do need to deal with it. You're inviting the solutional energy to come to you.
Yes. And, you know, if you were brought up in a household that equates worrying with compassion, it's very common.
Yes.
And you want to reevaluate that because You could be a compassionate person and not be an over worrier. Or you might think, if I don't worry, I don't care. That these are old beliefs that, you know, that block empathy, but they're important to compassionately look at in yourself and maybe reconsider those beliefs because they're not really true.
Mm-hmm.
You're compassionate if you worry 50% less.
Yes. As I said, let's change the word to concern. It's a different energy. You're like, I'm concerned. Have you thought about it? Can you see it from this point of view? And it's just showing a different side of things where with worry, even the sheer tone of it is anxiety. And we just don't see things in anxiety. So now this is a one that kind of we should have talked about after the narcissism, but I just turned to it is how long does it take to heal from a narcissistic relationship? From my own point of view, it took a while. But the journey was more to do with realizing what I was in and realizing that there was no going to be quick exit, not without retaliation. And so I had to plant those seeds that he wanted to change. And then it was plant the seeds, you know, when it actually asked for the divorce, it was still 2 years before he moved out. And everything was like, you know, you're ready to move out now. You know, you've got a girlfriend, you've got a life, you know, time to move on. And it's that nurturing of it, which no, there is no queer clear cut, which sometimes there has to be if there's violence behind the narcissist. But it's difficult to go out of that. But it's at the same time, it's empowering to yourself to know that you are taking back control over your own life and not giving them that control anymore. But you've got to realize that first, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you do. And it's a process. It's typically very, very hard to get out of a relationship mm-hmm. with a narcissist, particularly if you have kids
yes.
or you have their business interests. It's very, very hard because they try and reel you back in as well,
mm-hmm.
where you know, you might make the split and then they send you a text. I'm thinking about you.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm ready to go into therapy now.
Yeah.
You know, something enticing and you're lonely and you're feeling miserable mm-hmm. with this. Here's this person making a turnabout. And so they'll reel you back in again. And, you know, you can do that if you want, but it's a hard learning and it could mm-hmm. take years. But it's a very long-term process. But if you're ready to make the split, if you're really ready in your heart to go, I suggest cold turkey if you can possibly
yeah.
do it.
If because- yeah, I have the three kids. And he was in charge of the money, which is another form of their power. And so it made it very, very difficult. And so I knew, actually, I went to a divorce workshop where the first thing the lawyer says, you don't want to employ me.
Mm-hmm.
And all the tips and things of how to bring about a divorce without bringing lawyers in it, because he said, we're just going to make the money and we're going to make things even more difficult for you and be less healing. So if you can do it a different way. And then I knew, okay, I had to get to work and start planting my seeds. And, you know, look at it as it was a long term, that there wasn't going to be no quick fix. I didn't have the empowerment to do that. But at the same time, actually, it became also a part of my healing as the long term, I became stronger and stronger in who I was. Then I was also ready when the split came to kind of step out into the world.
Yes, that's right. And so people can go to this chapter directly in The Genius of Empathy on empathy deficient disorders, narcissism, mm-hmm. sociopaths, and psychopaths. So you could really become schooled
yes.
on who these people are, how to identify them. So you make a choice. You have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to be aware as a result of this conversation, what you could possibly be getting into here. This isn't just a simple fix or a simple
yes.
breakup, as hard as regular breakups
mm-hmm.
are. This is about a million times harder, I
yeah.
warn you.
Yeah.
So it's just something to consider. I'd like you to consider that when you're being bowled over by the seductive energy and love bombing of this incredible person you've
yes.
met.
That makes you feel that, no, you're in the wrong. You were imagining it. It never happened, you know, and that it's always like, you know, I love you. And you buy into it. You buy into the lies because they're so convincing. Right.
Well, all the more reason to make it short and sweet or just simply not go there.
Exactly.
Yes, I'm lonely. Yes, I haven't met someone in a really long time. But I'm going to just be very cautious here. I'm not going to go head over heels in love with this. I'm going to do that some testing and some wisdom and some patience.
Yeah.
You know, so at least do that for yourself. So you
yeah,
can.
you know, if you've got somebody that sweeps you off your feet, which is what they do, don't move in and don't put a ring on it. Right. You know, you'll generally find that if you don't commit to those things, they will lose interest and go on to the next one. So if you feel that this is kind of too good to be true, okay, ride the wave if you're intoxicated with this person. Don't take it to the next step, because somewhere down the line, he's going to want somebody else he can control and drop you and go for the next flavor. But if you commit, then they've got you under their control. So it's don't be in a rush, right?
Yeah, just be cautious and be aware. I think what we're doing in this conversation is highlighting some of the points to look for. Mm-hmm. And you can empower yourself by doing.
Yes.
And so just so you know, like in my point of writing The Genius of Empathy was to empower you with mm-hmm. practical tools
yes.
in these kinds of situations.
Mm-hmm.
It's a practical book. What to do if you meet a narcissist.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
to do if you're arguing with your spouse? What mm-hmm. to do if you're taking care of somebody who's ill and you're exhausted? You know, where does empathy come in all those situations
yeah.
in a practical, doable way?
Which here leads to this one, tips to cope with people who bully.
Yeah. And this, it's a terrible thing. Well, the narcissists and the sociopaths and psychopaths can be, you know, full-fledged bullies.
Yes.
And you don't want to give the bully any power. You know, you don't want to get into it. You want to get help immediately.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a school bully, you have to report it to the authorities. You have to tell at least a friend what's happening, because people keep bullying a secret and they're ashamed of it, because they believe what the bully's saying about them.
Yeah.
And, you know, the way to get around a bully is to resist it.
And I think that's where empathy needs to come in. I mean, I've actually interviewed people that went home and had the courage to tell their family that they were being bullied, to be told, suck it up, it will make you a man,
mm-hmm.
right? Instead of defense. So kind of feeling worthless, feeling, you know, they don't care. They're not in my defense. There must be something wrong with me because I'm feeling this way. And so if somebody is actually being bullied, there's a certain amount of empathy that we need to have to empower them, right?
Absolutely, but don't keep it to yourself.
Mm.
If you're being bullied by your husband or your wife, you need to tell somebody else about it so you can develop a plan. If you don't want this to be ongoing, you do not deserve bullying. Nobody deserves to be bullied.
No.
If
Nobody.
You encounter a bully, you must stop it immediately and get some help in dealing with it. And I know, you know, in the U.S. at least, there's some hardcore bullying.
Oh, got it.
Now. I mean, they just know zero tolerance for bullying. So there is help available in the school system or in a work situation. You can report this. This is not something they're going to tolerate.
No. And that's come about from people who have fought back and changed those laws and brought about this. So we are the change we seek, right? It's stand up to it. Now, this is a good one. You know, common challenges facing empathetic leaders.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's the point, you know, of leadership is to be an empathic leader. Mm-hmm. The old time leadership is more just do it my way or you're out. But the empathic leader is somebody who wants to embrace your ideas and hear what your creative input is and incorporate it to make it as part of a team.
Yes.
Because now most workplaces are part of a team, whereas in the past it was just one-to-one. So when you're part of a team, you're more aware of these kinds of things. And when you're an empathic leader, the team is going to become more creative.
Yes.
More, you know, cohesive, your productivity is going to go up versus a narcissistic leader who's going to just scare the team to death.
Yeah.
Not able to function properly.
Yeah, I always say that a good leader makes leaders out of others.
Uh-huh, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And they listen.
Mm-hmm.
Empathic listening is part of being a, a great leader and an empathic leader. You want to listen, but you don't want to let people go on too long, but you want to actually hear them. And you want to be open to not being the only one who's creative, but part of a team.
Yes.
You work as one organism. It's a different formation than the individual. You work as an organism and you value each other's input. It's like, you know, in combat, it's like the band of brothers. You want to stick together. You want to take care of each other.
Yeah.
You want to have each other's backs. And so that's a beautiful way to conduct a team. If that's not going on, then you need to address it in the workplace. The empathic leader will bring people together to try to work out conflict.
Right.
And so they're not afraid of conflict.
The healing grace of forgiveness. Now, forgiveness, I know for some people is really, really hard. If somebody's hurt them, they've done an injustice. We can forgive without condoning the act.
Yes, absolutely. That's the final chapter of the book, is the grace of forgiveness and releasing resentments. Forgiveness is not something you can force, and you can't always do it if you're not ready. It has sometimes some time has to pass on the incident. But when you do forgive, and when you do bring empathy into the situation, at least for somebody's wounds and shortcomings, then you're more apt to become freer and more lighthearted. And that's what you want. You don't want a bunch of resentments glommed on to you all of your life, and that's all you're thinking about. So forgiveness is something to strive for. It's not always possible, but you do what you can with it. It will be very helpful to free you. So you
You don't want to be a prisoner of resentment, right? Because that just holds you back. And and half the time, the person that's done you harm, they don't even realize that you're still feeling like that. So that forgiveness is for you. It's, again, not condoning the act, but the forgiveness is releasing the chains that the pain or the act has got on you. And you need to release yourself. So, you know, it's a beautiful book, right? You know, I love the coloring. I love everything else about it. But, you know, I love the way, the fact that you've written it in a way of giving solutions. This is the problem. This is what you can do about it. And it doesn't matter where someone's at. There's a chapter for them. And then maybe that, oh, at this chapter, I want to read first, because this is where I'm at. And then another chapter at another time is going to come to them. You can read linear from beginning to end, but also you can go to the chapters that you feel I need to know about right now. And so it's a practical book in the sense of, we can talk about empathy, we can talk about love, we can talk about solutions, but unless we actually give the tools to say, apply, you know, this, the whole philosophy around these shows is listen, learn, and apply. Because that's what it's about. And when you have the right skills and tools to apply, it is empowering you to make the right choices. It's empowering you in a way of I'm taking charge of my own life, and I'm not being led, you know, by the nose ring. And that's what we need. And it then allows us to have more empathy, because we do feel empowered. We do feel where, you know, when we're aware, we care. And when we care, that empathy and compassion is more loving and giving. And so that is the healingness that we need, not only in our own lives, but what we need in the world right now. So for all the problems we see, we are the solution. But first and foremost, we must be the solution to ourselves before we can be it to others.
That's great. And that is a major theme in the book. And I'm happy to share the book with everyone. It just came out this week. And I'll be, you know, giving workshops around the country online, that you, if you want to join in our discussion on empathy, you could go to my website, drjudithorloff.com, drjudithorloff.com. And I'm giving an online workshop on April 20th. East West Books is the sponsor, and you could get information to sign up. And the book is available at Amazon, all online sources, and in bookstores.
And for those that are listening, Dr. Judith Orloff is a doctor, and then Judith, J-U-D-I-T-H, Orloff, O-R-L-O-F-F.com. You can also find her on Facebook, Dr. Orloff, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube. And, you know, this this is the reason why I do these shows, is to bring this awareness to people, is that there is always an answer when you're willing to see it, when you're willing to hear it, when you're willing to participate. There is always an answer. There is nothing that we are going through today that we haven't gone through the history of time. But never in the history of time have we had so much wisdom and knowledge to help you through it as we have now, right? And that's the reason for, you know, the book. That's the reason for the shows. It's get the book. And I'm always encouraging people to have, you know, like a book club, podcast club. Listen to the podcast, read the book. Listen to the podcast, write notes as you're listening to it, then come together and share. Because somebody's heard it from this angle, somebody's heard it from that angle. And when you all share, suddenly you've got a bigger and rounder picture. And it becomes so much more encouraging, enlightening, and empowering to each and every one of you. So I think it's not just keep it to yourself, it's read and converse. Talk about it, because the more we talk about it, the more we demystify, and the more we empower our own empathic abilities.
Well put. I'm in total agreement with you. We are on the same page, and I hope we inspired people to just begin today. Let's say you've never done this before.
Yeah.
Begin today to show yourself some self-empathy and begin the process of opening up rather than beating yourself up. And just look, always remember, we're on this gorgeous planet.
Yeah.
And regardless of what's happening, you know, there's stars above. Mm-hmm. You can always look up at night and see a greater reality and know that we're all connected. I think that's what your podcast is about.
Yes. Yes.
Reconnecting everybody, you know, as one human family. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that empathy can do. And thank you for, you know, making that possible. You know, it's part of your podcast. That's a beautiful.
I can't be doing what I'm doing without you doing what you're doing. And that's what collaboration is about. That's what community is about, right? Sharing and celebrating each other's contribution. And we're all here to be of service to one another. We're all here with a beautiful instrument to play. And we can play on our own. But when we get together in an orchestra and we all play cohesively together, wow. Do we transcend, right? So, you know, that's the beauty of it. And we don't see all the beautiful people with heart, empathy, and love, because it's not what we see on media. It's not what we see on TV. They're sensationalists. They'll take a pimple and make it a volcanic eruption, because keeping you in fear is keeping you in control. If we stop buying the fear, we let go of their control and we start empowering our own choices, our own actions, our own empathy. We are then the solution. And there are so many more people who are solutioners out there than there are those that are creating the problem. It's just the media is covering the problem and not covering the people that have the solution. So let us be that voice. Share the podcast, share the book, share the message, talk about it, because that is how we empower each other.
We're totally agreed.
Thank you so much for sharing. Thank you for writing the book in the way that you have, because, you know, empathy very often gets caught up in spirituality and then feel, and people feel it's woo woo and la la. When you've written it in a way where it is the science, the practical, the everyday, and how to use it every day, and how stepping into empathy isn't weakness, it is strength. It is strength on all levels in all areas of our lives. And I think so many people are scared of empathy because they feel that it is this or that, or they're going to become too vulnerable. It's actually being strong in your vulnerability of empathy, because you know how.
That's right. And hopefully the book will show you how to do that.
Exactly. And I love the way you've written it, because you've given that solution all the way through, applicable actions that we can take in embracing our empathy, embracing our own self-love, and becoming that solution that we all need in the world. And those wonderful big, you know, warning signs, narcissist ahead, you have to avoid them, because there are plenty of them out there, folks. And You don't want to get involved. I promise you, you don't want to get involved. Or if you're involved, you want to get out. And you need to know how. And I'm glad that you've really addressed that quite completely in the book. So thank you for writing the book. Folks, thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for talking about it. Thank you for reading, because it's now up to you of what you do with it and how you empower yourselves and others around you. So thank you, Judith. Until next time, folks, bye for now. We hope that you enjoyed the show. There are so many more for you here on selfdiscoverywisdom.com. Just go to the podcast tag at the top there and you will see all the many genres and all 3,000 shows ready for your listening. We are here to serve you, to help you on your journey of life. And we know that through inspiration, it begets invitation. We are supported by you, the listeners, and those that we interview. Anything that you can spare us in donation would be greatly accepted. And we do hope that you enjoy the next show.